back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Look at that. We did it just like we're supposed to.
Yep. Well, till then. Yeah.
Except for that part.
Yeah, except for that. Our sponsor this hour is Pappy Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They handle everything John Deere as far as tractors, implements, you name it. They've got it down there. They also have the turf products, which are the riding mowers, zero-turn mowers. They have it all. Go down and see them. They've got it all in stock. And they also have Honda generators for when generator season is upon us. It could happen any minute.
You would think it would be winter.
Yeah.
But no, it's summer.
It's summer. So be prepared.
But they use them in the winter, too. What the heck?
Oh, yeah.
Live large.
Oh, yeah.
Have power all year long.
Yep.
Go crazy.
So you can go down and you can see them at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Give them a call at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com. No, I wasn't going to say it.
You were.
Yeah, I was.
Phil Lewis, my favorite website I invented a long time ago. ReddingTractors.com, because it's so easy.
Yeah. In fact, if you go to ReddingTractors.com, you'll still end up at Pappy Machinery.
Ta-da!
Yeah, there you go.
Look at that.
Yep.
Full service. You can get there any way you want.
That's right.
Yeah, you could type in just, you know, Bill was talking about crap on the radio.
Yep, and
boom.
Boom, Pappy Machinery comes right up. Yep.
I don't think Google's working that hard for us these days. Actually, it's probably good because they're up to no good.
That's right. So who's our guest?
What was that?
Who's our guest?
Who's our guest?
Yeah, come on.
I was just for the record, I was not straggling Bill about. Just right then. I actually can't reach him from here. So our guest this hour is the same guest as we had last hour. And if you missed it, you're blowing it. But go back to wethepeopleradio.us. We also have a whole bunch of shows. Goes back to 2017, December of 2017 to be accurate there. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. I like the whole name. Peter Vincent Pry. I don't know what your folks were thinking, but it's a great name. He's the executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security and the director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Both are congressional advisory boards. He also served on the Congressional Electromagnetic Pulse Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, and the House Armed Services Committee. He was an intelligence officer with the CIA, responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy, which is why we're talking about that today. And just in case you thought, well, yeah, so he's some guy who hung around in Washington, D.C., and how does he know anything? Well, he has a PhD in history and archaeology, and then, well, you know, he was obviously an overachiever. So we thought he'd go get another one in strategic studies. And then the CIA said, hey, this guy seems smart. We should call him.
We should call him and see what he thinks.
Call him up. He seems like a smart guy. We don't have so many of those all the time. And he's the author of numerous articles also and books. So I've got the articles posted that we're sort of referencing today, but and I also listed a link here to his articles on Newsmax. He's got a whole bunch of those. So if you head to the site, you'll be able to find him and also previous shows. We've done all sorts of fun things with him, and I'm sure we'll have all sorts of fun things in the future. It's really nice to talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about. And then give them more than 2 minutes to talk about it.
And we've been talking about the nuclear threat with between China and Russia and all the other little nations out there that want to have a bomb. You know, one of the questions that was kind of burning a hole in my brain was, you know, we were talking about Russia and China. Is there any chance the two of them could, you know, team up against the U.S.? I mean, they're both considered adversaries of the U.S. You think that would ever happen?
I think it has happened, and I think it has been a fact for many years now. But it's a fact that Washington hasn't seen, and I think official Washington still hasn't seen. And I don't know why they haven't, because more than a decade ago, there was a strategic partnership treaty signed between Russia and China. They have been China's growth as a military giant is based not alone on stealing U.S. technology. Russia has been providing them with a lot of their most advanced technology, including for nuclear missiles. There's even a deal now to sell China the S-400, which is one of Russia's most advanced anti-air and anti-missile systems. They have done military exercises together, including, I think Vostok 18. I think that, which was probably, it may well have been the largest military exercise in world history, that involved 300,000 troops and something like 20,000 vehicles of all kinds and thousands of aircraft. That was a joint exercise that involved China with Russia, and they've had other military exercises together. So they even did a nuclear war game together, that involved a Taiwan scenario where China got in a dust up with us. They were trying to take over Taiwan and Russia, and it escalated to a nuclear conflict where Russia came in on the side of China. So I think it's a fact. I think, and not only that, but I think that Russia and China, North Korea and Iran are all basically allied together. In this new Cold War that we face, people keep saying the new Cold War with China or the new Cold War with Russia. I think this new Cold War is against Russia and China, North Korea and Iran, in international terrorism, because Iran is the world's leading sponsor of international terrorism. And while these guys all have different ideologies and different goals, they are all united against the United States, you know, because they want to knock us off as the dominant actor in the world order and take over the world order and establish a new world order friendly to themselves and friendly to their interests, and that it will become a new Dark Ages because they will fall to fighting against each other to see who dominates it. But we may be long gone by the time that happens. I think that is a very serious threat, and that we would be very foolish and probably are being very foolish, mostly in Washington. There are some people who get it, that Russia and China are allied, but most Washington establishment still doesn't. They don't even understand that North Korea and China are allied. That, you know, we keep going back, begging Beijing, before this crisis, before we got into a crisis with China, you know, in 2017 when we were in crisis with North Korea and they were making almost weekly nuclear threats against us, you know, the answer of the administration was to go to Beijing with hat in hand and beg them to try to lean on North Korea, to pressure North Korea to give up the bomb. And that didn't work. In fact, every administration has been trying that since Bill Clinton, and it's never worked. And when are we going to learn that it's because China wants North Korea to have the bomb? China is a surrogate for both Russia and North Korea is a surrogate for both Russia and China, so that if they had to go to a nuclear war, they could rely on North Korea to do it. But even beyond that, and this gets to another point about why I think nuclear weapons are such a threat to us, and not that the technology has not in the long run been in our interests, I think that the bad guys are winning this new Cold War against us without having to fire a shot because of the intimidating factor of nuclear weapons. I think they learned the lesson. China understood this lesson since Sun Tzu, the great pre-Christian military philosopher Sun Tzu, whose book on war says the greatest victory is to achieve the greatest the best victory is won without battle. You know, to win without fighting. And I for sure they learned this lesson when we won without fighting the Cold War. You know, we were able to prevail in the Cold War through nuclear deterrence, basically, that did keep the Soviet Union bottled up until it collapsed of its own weight. And they're trying to do the same thing to us, not to keep us bottled up in this, but to drive us out of certain areas. You know, that's why they gave North Korea nuclear capabilities. In addition to being able to have someone who would fight a nuclear war for them as a surrogate if that became necessary, I think the first and maybe foremost point of that was the intimidating factor, the nuclear blackmail factor, to raise the risks, to change our calculus of risks and benefits of providing security guarantees to our Pacific allies. And the Chinese have actually put it to us bluntly, also when we've had confrontations with them. A Chinese general once asked one of our representatives from the State Department, are we really willing to trade Los Angeles for Taipei? In other words, in order to defend Taiwan from a Chinese invasion, are we really willing to sacrifice Los Angeles, for example? And North Korea basically has been asking that same thing via its nuclear threats. Is it really worth it to us to risk a nuclear EMP attack that could fry all of North America or losing a major American city to one of their ICBM strikes in order for us to protect Seoul and protect South Korea, to protect Japan, you know?
At that point, it would be nice to say, you basically can't hurt us because we've prepared for all these things, and God knows you've tried to help us get into that position, but for some reason we're still here, you know, we're still in the same hamstrung place. And, you know, for those people who haven't heard, you know, you speak on the EMP threat, maybe you could do the elevator part when we come back. You know, why don't we have that straightened out yet, and why is that still something they can hang over our heads? Because you would think that peace through strength thing that we figured out a long time ago would still be valid, and yet we're still rolling the dice. Our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You are listening to We the People, and you can join us at wethepeopleradio.us. You can catch us on the American Uncensored News Network in Redding, California, KRDT, channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m.
I pray that you are here Tuesday. Anything you want, you got it. Anything you need, you got it. Anything at all, you got it.
Who is it? Nothing's gonna get to me, but then again it might. What can I do to keep from going crazy in the night?
I thought I'd tee up the next part for you.
So,
because I bet you hear that playing in your head, you're like, "Oh my God!" I keep telling them the same thing over and over, and they keep not listening.
What?
Why aren't they? Why are we still talking about how they could take us out with a, you know, with all these different things?
Okay, well, all right. On EMP, and I don't want to talk a lot about that because we've talked about that at great length before.
Right. I just thought
I haven't
we should
actually gotten to my punchline.
Oh, dear.
after almost an hour and a half or whatever it's been.
We'll stay on as long as it takes. Oh, wait. No,
okay. But on the EMP issue, you know, to give a short answer to that, and it's really hard to give a short answer to that because I wrote a whole book about that, as you know, The Power and the Light, that explains what the problems are, and there are many problems. But maybe the most obvious problem to listeners is just think of Dr. Fauci as being in charge of EMP protection for the country. And that explains why we are still vulnerable.
So bottom line is we can be saved by wearing goggles?
Well, no. Just,
no, I'm kidding.
Here's an arrogant, incompetent bureaucrat,
yeah,
who I think most Americans realize at this point has been wrong about almost everything.
Yeah.
And wasn't prepared for the coronavirus. The President of the United States had to step in. You know, billions of dollars invested, decades invested, supposedly getting ready for serious biological threats like biological warfare. And somehow the Washington establishment, the Washington bureaucracy, managed not to be prepared. You know, because there's deep corruption and incompetence. And the concept of the brilliant technocrat who's going to take care of us is a falsehood. You know, these people are dangerously incompetent, the concentrated power in Washington, dangerously incompetent. They've been dangerously incompetent on the coronavirus and unfortunately led our president into bad decisions like closing down the economy that actually poses risks beyond his he might not get reelected as a consequence of that, but there are even more profound implications for, you know, our society coming apart at the seams, and maybe one of our adversaries exploiting this moment of great American military and economic weakness. You know, we haven't been so vulnerable since 1939, 1940, 41, you know, before World War II. And maybe even more so because this is also the anniversary, it's the 75th anniversary of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but it's also the 80th anniversary of the fall of France in 1940. And there was a great book written by a French freedom fighter, a member of the resistance, a guy named Marc Bloch, who explained how was it that France fell in 1940, when even guys like Winston Churchill thought that the French army, you know, French army was not weak. It actually had more tanks than the Germans did. They had the Maginot Line. You know, Winston Churchill thought that the French would be able to win. But they fell. They collapsed. And Marc Bloch's theory, and I have to add as a footnote, we only know what Marc Bloch thought about this. You know, his book was published after his death. As a resistance fighter, he was captured by the Nazis, by the SS, and executed. But his manuscript survived, and it was published after his death. And Marc Bloch's theory, and I think it's a true theory, is that the real reason, in addition to the military tactical things, obviously the French hadn't anticipated the Blitzkrieg, and the Germans, the way they used the technology of air power and armor, was unanticipated by any of the Allies. And that is true, and that those are major physical reasons why they lost. But I think, Mark, a factor that we ignore at our peril, and maybe the most important reason they lost, okay, was that France had lost confidence in the idea of France. They lost confidence of themselves. France, before 1940, looked a lot like the United States does today. There were bitter battles going on between communists and people on the right, and you know, people felt the government was corrupt and incompetent, and they didn't regard World War One as a proud heritage, many of them, but saw it as a terrible failure of the French government, which it was in many respects, you know, in terms of the way the war was, they weren't ready for that one either, and it was so incompetently managed. But there were conspiracy theories about, you know, the war had been fought not to save France, but to enrich, you know, the merchants of death, as they were called. There was even a book of that title back then that was extremely popular, not just in France, but all over the West. And there were many of the same attitudes in France in 1940 that you'll find in the United States today, where people, the American idea, you know, is not supported by a majority of the population or all the population anymore. You know, when people, even in the face of the Nazi threat, the Nazi conquest of France, there were just many French who were willing to reach an accommodation and establish the Vichy government and go along, including generals who had fought in World War One, you know, Marshal Pétain. You know, these guys became Nazi collaborators. And that is, well, that's a long way from your original question, but it's a point of vulnerability that we have that goes beyond the technological vulnerabilities I've been talking about, to nuclear weapons, to EMP, to these advanced systems and all the rest. The most important bulwark for our security, I think, just as it is for would have been for France in 1940, or just as it would have been for any nation, is nationalism, you know, patriotism, that your adversary knows that the divisions stop at the water's edge, and that when they come after you, everyone was going to be united and defend the country, defend America like it's your mother. And if they don't believe that, And if it's not true, that is arguably an even more, a greater incentive for war, for aggression by the other side, than the imbalance in technological and numerical weaponry that we've been talking about.
And do you think we're projecting that position right now?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think I'm afraid we are. And we've actually had this experience in our history already. The Vietnam War, right? You know, here's a totalitarian communist state, a pygmy compared to us by any measure you would take. Militarily, they had no nuclear weapons, but they had persistence, and they were willing to sacrifice millions of their own people in that war. And they understood us. Their intelligence services and those of Russia and China that collaborated with them understood us well enough so that they, when 1968 came along, you know, that most historians point to that as the pivotal year in the Vietnam War. You know, that was the year of the anti-war protests and the disruption of the Democrat National Convention and the peak of the countercultural movement, you know, and that's why they decided to launch the Tet Offensive during that year, you know, that because we thought up to that point our political and military leaders had been telling us we'd been winning the war militarily. And it was true. We were winning the war on the ground. The bad guys even lost the Tet Offensive. They lost it decisively. But our own divisions and our lack of commitment to prevail in that war was understood by our adversaries, and it's why they launched that act of aggression then, and they were right. You know, it began. We didn't lose the war immediately in 1968, but it was the beginning of the end for us. You know, after that, after Nixon got elected, he realized he had to get us out of the war and hoped to salvage a honorable peace, and we ended up with a dishonorable peace with the helicopters flying off the. So even a pygmy state like North Vietnam that doesn't have nuclear weapons can defeat us if we don't believe in America and don't believe in our cause anymore. The North Koreans tried it. They thought that they had the opportunity to do it in the Korean War. North Korea didn't have any nuclear weapons. They were so aggressive that they were willing to attack a nuclear-armed America, our ally, in South Korea, thinking they might be able to prevail because they were willing to sacrifice many more lives than we were. So they still think that way, and they've proven in their histories that they're willing to sacrifice countries like Russia and China, tens of millions, you know, in order to achieve their goals. And so I think that this is a... I don't know anybody. I've been in the national security field all my professional career. I'm 66 now. I've been studying this stuff since I was 13 years old, and I don't have know any of my colleagues. All of my colleagues agree that we think this is the most threatened we've ever seen the United States. You know, because we've got this constellation of actors who are working together against us in China, Russia, North Korea, and Iran, and international terrorists. And it's happening at a time when we have these profound doubts about the idea of America and deep divisions within our own country. In fact, that's even being kind. I've said on your show before, I think the Democrat Party has become a totalitarian movement itself. It has all the signs, all the earmarks of a totalitarian movement where it just cares about political power. It doesn't care about the truth. It doesn't care about the well-being of the country. It just wants to get political power and will do anything it has to get it. You know, we've never had a situation like that in the country before. We are so...
No,
it's from within as well as from without.
Exactly. And it's so obvious right now, too. I mean, it's worse than it's ever been.
And the more we leave the technocrats in power, the more difficult it will become. So here would be the...
Well, let me give you some more bad news.
Hold on 5 seconds, because we need to celebrate capitalism while we, I would say here's our message out to the Dr. Faucis of the world. You're listening to We the People.
Not capitalism. Capitalism is a Marxist term.
Exactly. That's true. Okay, so stop that. So we just have to take a break. We'll just leave it at that. Got to take a break. You can catch us on the American Uncensored News Network in Redding, California, KRDT, channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m.
'cause I'm all right. I don't want you to tell me it's time to come home. I don't care what you say anymore. This is my life. Go ahead with your own life. Leave me alone. Never said you had to offer me a second. I see nothing wrong.
Yeah, take that, Dr. Fauci.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, we've talked about all the capabilities and what do you think, or how far? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what? How far do we have to? How far can we go with China before they're going to be in a position, or think they're in a position where a first strike is actually feasible and a real option for them? You see that coming?
I think a first strike is feasible and a real option for them right now, even if it's true that the balance is only, suppose it's true that the State Department is right and they've only got 300 weapons, okay? And we've got 1,500. I mean, one of the great fallacies of arms control that we have sort of hypnotized ourselves into believing is that, well, as long as we've got a lot more nuclear weapons than, let's say, China or North Korea, and the same nuclear number of nuclear weapons with Russia, which we don't, by the way, they have a vast, overwhelming superiority in all categories when it comes to nuclear weapons now. But that's always been a fallacy, the idea that that the other side is going to count our number of nuclear weapons and be deterred by that. Far more important to them is the issue of political will. You know, how important are the stakes? And, you know, because I don't think at the end of the day, or at least I hope that this is true of an American president, I don't think it is worth trading Taipei for Los Angeles, you know? Right. And I don't think most Americans believe that's worth it either. That we would be willing to get into an exchange with these guys to protect the interests of our Asian Pacific allies and sacrifice American lives in our homeland in large numbers.
But would they
think it was ever true? I don't think it was ever true that we were willing to do that for NATO Europe.
Right.
You know, we've got to. That's why we tried to convince them that it was true by building up large numbers and maintaining parity with them. But that bluff, okay, becomes less and less credible as you don't even invest in the deterrent anymore. As, you know, President Trump is trying to reverse that, but like I said before, it's going to be a decade before we start to see any new bombers or missiles, and even then they're going to be armed with obsolete warheads anyway. So this is a window of huge vulnerability. But the thing that concerns me, even more than that, is you see we're losing the new Cold War, even without a war. Right now we're losing it, and Americans don't seem to see that. Let me give you a few examples. The South China Sea, all right? China taking over the South China Sea is as big a geopolitical and geostrategic defeat for the West as if Russia took over Western Europe. That's how valuable the South China Sea is, okay, in the global chess game. It's that valuable. It's equal to, like, losing Western Europe. And they've done it. They take it over. They took it over without war. You know, the Hague Court has said that they've taken it over illegally. They said that years ago. But it hasn't changed China's mind. They haven't backed off. So we send a cut. We keep challenging them. And we've escalated the level of the challenge by sending, now we've got two aircraft carrier groups that have gone in there to challenge them. But the fact of the matter is, they have taken over the South China Sea. They have de facto ownership of that property. And they did it, I think, they did it under the cover. They know that because they're a nuclear power, That's a measure of our political will, that they've tested us in this new Cold War that's going on. You know, that we have not been willing to escalate to a military level, except for showing the flag. And, you know, because we don't want to get in a nuclear conflict with China. We don't want to get in a shooting conflict with China. Their conventional forces are too powerful in the South China Sea. Their nuclear forces, it just isn't worth it to us. It hasn't been yet, and I hope no president does go to nuclear war with China for the South China Sea. I think that would be the wrong decision. So they have called our bluff. They've started to call our bluff on this, all right? You know, which is why there's talk among our allies in Taiwan and Japan even. There are groups in South Korea about maybe we should get our own nuclear capabilities, you know, to state hold off these guys to make it credible. Another example is Guam. You know, North Korea back in 2017 repeatedly made threats against nuking Guam, you know, which is U.S. territory. And up until this year, it's where our most formidable, our best and most powerful card was located. You know, we had a B-52 wing based in Guam with aerial refuelers. And this was a big threat, a big part of the umbrella, the nuclear umbrella, against both China and North Korea. Now, we've pulled all that out of Guam. It's been pulled all out and sent back to Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota. And the Air Force has put a happy face on that. They say, well, this is so that we can be even more flexible. And having our stuff in Minot is even better than it would be having it in Guam, okay? And the press hasn't challenged that or anything. But most Americans don't think deeply about these strategic matters. I promise you that North Korea and China have noticed that we've pulled those forces out of Guam, and that it has sent a message to them that despite the U.S. Air Force happy face, isn't fooling them, okay? Maybe it is possible that the Air Force did it. They don't care about the threats from North Korea or China, and that they're that naive, all right? But certainly the Chinese and North Koreans are going to think the reason we pulled out of Guam is because of them and because of that threat. This is exactly what Russia and China hope to accomplish by nuclearizing North Korea, that they would be able to win without war by forcing us out of the Pacific and reducing the credibility of our security guarantees to our Pacific allies. At some point, those Pacific allies are going to have to start asking themselves, am I better off being allied to the United States, or should I cut a deal with China, Russia, and North Korea and start buddying up with them? You know, because that would guarantee my security. You know, for sure, if I was friendly with China, surely they wouldn't let North Korea nuke me. You know, that would be the easiest, cheapest solution for them. We've got another thing happening as we speak going on with Russia. We all know about Russia taking over Chechnya. We know about the Russia little green men in Ukraine, where basically they've been crucifying Ukraine to send a message to the NATO alliance that America's security guarantees and Britain's security guarantees are worthless because we guaranteed the sovereignty of Ukraine in exchange for Ukraine giving up its nukes at the end of the Cold War, and obviously those security guarantees are worthless. And but we've got a new development here where Russian little green men have been found in Belarus. There's an election coming up in Belarus. Belarus has been in Russia's orbit. The president of Belarus, a guy named Lukashenko, very pro-Russian. He even wanted to have Belarus rejoin Russia and give up its sovereignty and become part of Russia. So Russia loves Lukashenko. But the people of Belarus have been increasingly unhappy under his regime. And there have been demonstrations, and there's going to be an election, you know, that might throw Lukashenko out, that might endanger him, which would endanger Russia's hold on Belarus. And Belarus, by the way, is very important to Russia because it's an invasion route into Poland and the Baltic states. And it connects them to the Russian enclave at Kaliningrad, too. That in itself is an issue for another topic. I mean, that's just, if you look at a map, you know, in the discipline of geopolitics, it's almost a predictor of future wars. When a state is not geographically contiguous, normal nation states are usually geographically contiguous, you know?
Right.
And look at Pakistan. There used to be this thing called East and West Pakistan, and now it's Balochistan. You know, Pakistan had a war with India to stop Balochistan from getting independent. And you've got Russia is not geographically contiguous. It's got Kaliningrad with Belarus in between, and Kaliningrad is in between Poland and the Baltic states. And then there's another little island that's occupied and by the 14th Army down in Moldova, which is in southeastern Europe. So there's another little part of Russia that theoretically it's not really part of Russia, but it is because it's got the 14th Army on it. You know, just like Kaliningrad has got, you know, is a little fortress occupied by Russian forces. So now we've got these Russian little green men mysteriously appearing. Hundreds of them have been discovered in Belarus. So it looks like, you know, I mean, that's a very bold thing to basically, it looks like the KGB has been preparing for a coup d'etat to ensure that Lukashenko's regime will continue friendly to Russia.
Right.
And they don't care about what NATO is going to do with the United States or how this is going to look in world opinion, okay? But these are all examples of things where I think we're losing the new Cold War in the way the bad guys want, because nuclear weapons are such that's what makes them most important, that you can actually win without war. Because when you do the calculations about, well, is it worth it for me to intervene in Ukraine? But if I do that in too big a way, maybe it'll anger Russia, and I don't want to get in a nuclear war with Russia. How about South China Sea? Is it really worth it? Should I escalate from showing the flag to maybe trying to take back one of those islands? What happens if I get in a shooting war with China out there? They've got nuclear weapons. Same thing with Guam. Should we keep those guys out there with Kim Jong-un threatening to nuke Guam? Or do I move them to remove that tempting target? You know? And I think I don't want to put the one might say the bad guys certainly at least perceive this as America losing its nerve. I hate to phrase it that way because American politicians, I don't want to encourage reckless behavior, okay?
Right.
One could argue that this is prudent for us to be doing that because I don't think that it is worth sacrificing American lives for the geopolitical interests of our Asian Pacific allies. You know, we've been able to get away with this for many decades, but at the end, I don't want to sacrifice Los Angeles or Chicago for Taipei or Seoul, right? You
not
know,
even,
or at least
not
I think that's
Chicago?
How most Americans think, and hopefully that's what an American president will think when he calculates it. And this, too, puts us at a disadvantage. This is just a fact of geostrategy, you know, that nukes put us at this kind of disadvantage, and the bad guys have learned the lessons of the Cold War. And they're doing the same thing back against us, except now it's the forces of freedom that are losing.
That's a bad trend. Let's take a quick break, and because I think we just had a little bit of an international incident in Belarus or someplace over there.
Okay, so we're going to celebrate free enterprise this time. I have been misspeaking. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. You can catch us on the American Uncensored News Network in Redding, California, KRDT, channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m.
Boys, you've got to draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
All right, with T-minus 9 minutes.
Wasn't there a a bunch of Russians arrested over there. I think they called them Russian contractors.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Those are the little green men that I'm referring to.
Yeah.
Over 100 of them they found out about them. You know, fortunately for Belarusia, under Lukashenko, they're a totalitarian or authoritarian state too. So they've got a great secret police service. And apparently maybe they didn't get the memo from Moscow,
exactly.
Help these guys or ignore them or something. But anyway, yeah, they discovered that and they arrested a bunch of them. But there's supposed to be hundreds more. And what are they doing there? So, you know, it looks like another Crimea type thing going on, and that's the kind of thing that can blow up into a war. But since we've only got 9 minutes, let me finally get to my punchline. And, I think there is a technological way out of this bind. And I've made the argument before. I think Ronald Reagan saw all of this and understood all of these strategic disadvantages that we had in the long run in the nuclear competition, which is why he started the Strategic Defense Initiative Program. You know, Reagan's vision, it wasn't just his vision, but it was Edward Teller and Albert Wallstetter and a lot of the great strategic minds, you know, of the Cold War also realized that we were at a disadvantage when it came to this. And what we needed to do was get beyond the technology of nuclear weapons to something else, to something that was better than nuclear weapons, to something that would be able to neutralize them and make them obsolete, and at the same time would be consistent with our own civilizational values, with our Judeo-Christian values, and that would be popular. And that was the idea of space-based missile defenses, or SDI, an example of which is Brilliant Pebbles, you know, which was a system, contrary to what the left tells people, SDI actually did produce technologies that could achieve what Reagan wanted, that would have been able to intercept successfully large numbers of ballistic missiles. And Brilliant Pebbles is one of them. It was ready to go in 1993. A good friend of mine, Ambassador Henry Cooper, was the director of the Strategic Defense Initiative Program when Brilliant Pebbles was ready to go. But Bill Clinton, for ideological reasons, because the Democrat Party has always loved the mutual assured destruction philosophy, they're, as a party, they have been ones who thought that deterrence, nuclear deterrence, will work forever, okay? And we don't want to upset the apple cart by defending ourselves. And so Clinton, not only did he nix Brilliant Pebbles, but he nixed the whole Strategic Defense Initiative and canceled it. And that's one of the things that many of us have hoped that President Trump had in mind by reestablishing the U.S. Space Force, that we would be moving toward resurrecting this idea of space-based missile defenses that would completely change the game we've been playing through the whole Cold War, so that defensive technologies would now have the advantage. The advantage wouldn't be with the guy who strikes first. It wouldn't be with the guy who has the most or better nuclear weapons. And we, instead of being based entirely on the threat of delivering mega deaths against Russia or China or North Korea or Iran, it would be based on destroying their nuclear missiles and protecting the lives of our people. And it would be protecting the lives of their people, too, because it would make it unnecessary for us to make a nuclear retaliatory strike if it's successful. And Brilliant Pebbles, the technologies were proven. They weren't just on the drawing board. There were experiments done. We've actually, in fact, Elon Musk's space program incorporates a lot of the technologies that were used and developed in the Brilliant Pebbles and Strategic Defense Initiative space programs. You know, like these computers that are so good that a rocket booster doesn't have to be expended anymore. It can actually land itself. You know, that's actually derivative from one of the things that came out of SDI. So that could be the way out. And, and it could be done pretty quickly, much more quickly than we can modernize the nuclear deterrent, and more cheaply, too. You know, 5 years, it'd probably take us about 5 years to deploy a Brilliant Pebbles system, and it could be done for $20 billion. And, we're planning to spend over $1 trillion over the next decade on modernizing our nuclear deterrent. I'm not saying that we shouldn't do that, but at the end of the day, after a decade and spending $1 trillion, we're still going to be far behind the Russians and probably behind the Chinese. And these same problems with nuclear deterrence and nuclear weapons that are sort of inherent to our civilizational differences and to our geostrategic calculations. You know, is it worth the candle to sacrifice Los Angeles for Taipei or Seoul or Tokyo? Are still going to be with us. That won't have solved the problem. But brilliant pebbles, space-based missile defenses, that can solve the problem. And that's the way out of this bind. And I just hope President Trump does get a second term and does it. It's something the Democrat Party shows no interest in, never has. And, you know, although that would be another way of us being saved, put quotes around that. Because, you know, if we become a tyranny, a one-party system, like Russia and China and North Korea, they might not feel that they need to take us out anymore. You know, this is sort of the attitude that Sparta had during the Peloponnesian War, when in its conflict with Athens, when they finally defeated Athenian democracy and the Delian League, which was the other democratic states allied with Athens. The Spartans didn't destroy them. They just made them into tyrannies. And it wasn't the existence of the states that they feared as much as the existence of a free political system. On the other hand, our modern totalitarian states and personalities like Kim Jong-un are not as merciful as the Spartans were. So I'm not sure I'd put even high hopes at that. I think they're more like Hitler and Stalin and Mao Zedong. Who, even if you're willing to be a tyranny, that might not be enough for them. You know, if you have enough autonomy so that you're not completely enslaved to them, you know, that's enough for them perhaps to decide to take you out. You know, regardless of what your political system is like.
Yeah, that's, you know, I never thought of that before, but you're right. If we did go to a one-party system, we'd be just like the bad guys.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Which is something
we could
that
all get along
they
then.
All claim that they don't want and yet strive really hard to achieve.
Oh, my goodness. Anyone who has had to try to go through a program in one of our universities today, I'm sure... Even back in the 80s, you know, when I was going to graduate school, just graduating in the early 80s, you know, after which I took my first job in Washington, it was like a one-party totalitarian system. Even in the early 80s, conservative professors had to hide under their desks. If we had conversations, it was behind a closed door, you know, and it's 1,000 times worse today.
Well, and now
there aren't any conservative professors left.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it's bled out into the rest of our society. I mean,
right.
We had a whispered conversation with a waitress yesterday. I mean, how silly is that? While Bill was wrangling with the large Marge there about the masks. All righty. We have, believe it or not, burned through our whole 2 hours. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Been very
educational.
And
I apologize for being late and picking
up
the phone.
No worries. Bill takes heart medication, and mine appears to be fine, so, you know, not a panic.
Yeah.
Well, I knew that your sense of humor and ability to be like a stand-up comic
we'll do our
would
shtick.
Fill in for me. So thank you again for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. You've been listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. You can catch us on the American Uncensored News Network in Redding, California, KRDT, channel 23.10, Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m.